Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around. Call 1-800-FURNACE. Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, welcome to another brand new My Mate Bought a Toaster. Now, I've been trying to get this human being on this show for a long time. I feel like he, you know what, still waters running deep. And I feel like the way to get into those deep waters is to get into his Amazon history. And I'm very, very pleased to welcome the wonderful Matt Ford to My Mate Bought a Toaster. Hello, Matthew Ford. Hello.
Hello, Thomas Price.
Very before we start. Hello, Mr. Ford. How are you? You okay?
Yes, I'm very good. I haven't set foot outside at all for nearly 4 weeks.
What? How have you done that then?
Well, I'm shielding because I have severe asthma because of two types of medication I'm on. I'm in the high risk group. I think on Monday or Tuesday it'll be 4 weeks since I live in a flat, so I don't have my own. We've got communal gardens here, but I haven't been in them.
No.
You know, I've got no outdoor space of my own, and I've not set foot out of the front door for what is almost 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. My word. Do you live with anyone or are you by yourself?
I live with my girlfriend. Right. So that's been, you know, I've got human contact and interaction. And I just got back into running, which was slightly frustrating. So what I've done, I bought quite a cheap exercise bike off the internet.
Yes.
Which I think is in this.
Oh, well, don't, now, I mean, that's a spoiler right there, Matt. We'll absolutely get to that.
But that has allowed me to at least, you know, work up a sweat and blow off the cobwebs a bit.
Yeah, and that's just the act of putting it together, I assume, because they're bastards to build those things. They are, they're fuckers. Good. I mean, that's impressive already, because most people, when they do buy an exercise bike, that's just instantly a clothes rack. That's what they bought.
Yeah, well, I bought it I wouldn't have bought it were it not for the lockdown, so that's a change in my life as a result of this, which will hopefully... I feel like I'm losing weight, so... hopefully this will actually make me healthier, all this business.
I think there's a lot of that going on. I think I'm in a weird place where I'm feeling fitter. Like, I'm running every other day, and I've started to look at my splits, Matt. I'm not going to lie to you. I like to look at how
your splits.
Yeah, I'm getting quite into the splits on Strava.
What are splits? What, so doing the splits?
No. It's the splits of how long it takes you to do a kilometre or a mile. So it takes me about 5 minutes, 15 seconds to do a kilometre. Right? Bearing in mind, wow, to give that some context, when that guy did the marathon in 2 hours, I think his splits were somewhere in the sort of 3-minute region. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, mate. It's,
yeah, like, but you're really fit, though.
It's good. It's been okay. Yeah, but here's the thing. For getting fitter by the run, but my God, I'm getting fatter at the same time because I'm...
No way. You're kidding me.
I'm getting fitter. And I swear to you, I've never felt fitter, but I probably haven't been this fat since I was about 16 because I'm just pouring in. There's great lagers. There's some lovely ales. There's a whole range of chocolates going on. Okay, so Matt Ford, let's dive back then. Now, you were quite a late adopter to Amazon because your first order isn't made until the end of July 2011. So can we just get a quick sort of where is the Matthew Ford of 2011? What's going on with him, please?
Well, I was a late adopter because I was quite... I didn't really know what Amazon was. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure that I trusted it. And I just thought, well, I can buy stuff in the shops.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't being a Luddite, but I just thought, I don't need it. And then what it was, I got a... Oh, I know what it was.
Oh,
you know what it was? I think I got mugged. I think that's what... You know what? I've never thought of this before.
Okay.
But that set in line a chain of events. That's what happened. I got mugged in Streatham on, I think it was either Easter Sunday or Easter Monday morning at like 7 a.m.
Wow.
By a gang of 4 guys, bright sunshine, sort of punched me in the face. One of them was waving a bottle at my head.
Awful.
All very scary at
that's
time.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
Bust my nose all down my shirt.
So not fans of the stand-up then, clearly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Whew,
yeah. I was doing overnight radio at the time at Talk Sport, and I would do 1 a.m. till 6 a.m. and then I was staying at a mate's house in Streatham, so that's why I was wandering the streets that time of the morning.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd had a pay-as-you-go phone, I think forever. I never had a contract out of sort of laziness, just, I don't know, fecklessness, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one of the things they nicked was my pay-as-you-go phone. So that forced me to get a contract. I got an Android phone, and one of the things that was on it was Amazon Music.
Oh.
So then I could download music. So then I started using Amazon to download music.
So it's the mugging what done it. So do you think the muggers were somehow sort of spiced up by Amazon? Do you think they were getting some backhanders from Amazon?
Mate, I mean, I think they were just angry. They also got my inhaler, so I'm not sure if they're asthmatic or what. They didn't get my wallet. I mean, it's the only mugget. I'm so better off as a result because it saved me a fortune on my phone bill.
I was putting,
you know, you pay as you go. It costs a fortune to run a mobile phone on a pay as you go.
Dude.
So it's probably the only mugging where the victim has been financially better off as a result.
the pay as you go model. I mean, Martin Lewis has physically, noticeably aged just because of the pay. I love it when he gets livid about that.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, some people obviously can't afford to get a car. It was just laziness.
Well.
So they spurred me. They made me a better man.
Yeah, they made you a better man. They made you an Amazon man. And then you're definitely a man. Well, some of these orders are quite man's manish. So Highwayman.
Ooh.
Yeah. The Highwayman, various artists. That's your Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson.
Oh, I love Johnny Cash.
Jennings and Chris Christopherson. I absolutely love Johnny Cash. But for me, Johnny Cash is a sort of crossover artist. He brings people to country. Whereas this feels quite authentically country, the Highwayman collection. Is that fair to say?
Well, what there's a particular song on it that I wanted, which is the Highwayman, which each of them take a verse in turn, but I had an old version where it's just Cash singing it, which is my favorite. Anyway, I'm trying to track it down, but that was the best I could do in 2011.
So that was the
story behind that.
So in the days where you'd have to go hunting for a song. Interesting reviews here. Yeah. S. Clark, very much backing up the Matt Ford approach. I bought this solely for the song Highwayman as it was cheap. Thanks for the review.
It's a great song. Good old S. Clark.
Good old S. Clark. Overall, a nice collection of songs, but I find number one gets repeated and the rest largely gets ignored.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way, isn't it, with those sorts of albums. When you buy an album for one track,
that's
inevitable.
It is. And also, dangerously, they've done that at track number one. You know, that is your encore track right there, but they've put that up top. They've closed, you know, they've opened with the closing song there. So the rest of the song's just sort of, because then you go on to songs like Jim, I Wore a Tie Today.
Oh, God.
So that's a little bit of country there. So you're a bit of a fan of country, but also, Matt Ford, you're a fan of pure class as well, because you've got Never Forget, the ultimate Take That collection on the 31st of July, 2011. Yes, Matt. Yes. Matt.
So good. I mean, my natural constituency of music is Oasis. Uh-huh. And Oasis, Kasabian, Reverend and the Makers, the Arctic Monkeys, that sort of thing, as well as country and Dire Straits. But I just take that as probably the greatest pop band of, well, actually the Beatles are probably the greatest pop band of all time, but like modern pop.
Yeah.
I always had a weak spot for Take That. And never forget, again, I bought three albums based on the one song I want. I bought The Highwayman because I wanted The Highwayman. I bought Never Forget because I wanted Never Forget. And I bought Baker Street because I wanted Baker Street.
Yes, Baker Street there as well. Yeah, nice. So you buy the whole album because of the entry-level song. And so, like, in the same way that, you know, you like The Highwayman song, and then that is a gateway drug to the likes of Chris Christopherson et al. Similarly, you buy Never Forget for the big songs, and then you end up getting introduced to Lulu halfway through. Take That, absolutely dreamy, isn't it?
Exactly. Oh, I mean, they work. The thing is with Take That, And to be fair to E17 as well.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, go on, bring them into this. Why not?
They both had proper singer-songwriters at the core. So Gary Barlow and Tony Mortimer were writing the songs.
Mm.
So they're not like other boy bands where they're reliant on a record label providing them with songs.
Yes.
These guys can write their own stuff and they were the best at it. Gary Barlow, whatever I think of him, is one of the best pop songwriters since Elton John.
He is fucking brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
No, and, you know, there should be no shame in admitting that Never Forget. Never Forget is one of the perfect pop songs. The choral opening, the bass.
Yeah, always get a kids' choir involved. Whether or not you're singing, whether or not you're singing, well, I wish it could be Christmas. You know, the kids' choir coming at the end of that?
Yes,
always,
Wizard,
thank you. Always get a kid's quiet. We come so far.
It
goes straight to my spine. It tingles, man.
And it's got that magic thing that Don't Look Back in Anger's got it as well, where it's slightly melancholic, but it's still uplifting. It feels like a summer's afternoon.
Yes.
It's pop. But
yeah.
Pop's good, right?
It's forgivable pop, mate. It's forgivable pop. it bothers me when people sort of suggest that there's some sort of guilty pleasure thing. I'm just like, if it's a pleasure, it's a pleasure. I don't really get guilt unless I get a pleasure out of like killing kittens. That's probably a guilty pleasure. But this is just great songs.
Yeah. There's nothing guilty about it. I'm not going to go to confession for listening to Take That.
Quite right too. That would be fucking weird. That'd be a very weird confession.
Ooh, I don't want to hear no more crying. Just come on, let me know what you've been buying.
So, and then let's crash on through now. So that was 2011. Let's skip on to, where should we go? Let's go to 2013 there, Matt, and see what we've got here. Now, this is interesting. Right, so we've got Hughgate School. Tell us a little bit about this, because obviously politics, big part of your life, right?
Yes, I'm a total political obsessive, and I love a good political autobiography or biography or any sort of political book, really. And Hugh Gaitskill is a former leader of the Labour Party, and he was one of the early reformers of the party who tried to reform something called Clause 4 of Labour's constitution. It wasn't until Tony Blair became leader that they were able to reform it. So I was fascinated by him, and bought the biography. Around the same time that I bought the football hooligan film ID.
Yeah, so it's a weird combo, I'll be honest. Yeah, ID bought in the same same sort of batch. What's going on in your life there in 2013 that makes you sort of need to explore football hooliganism and moderate centrist politics?
Yeah, it suggests that I was quite angry, I suppose. With 2013, Ed Miliband would have been leader of the Labour Party. Cameron would have been Prime Minister. Probably quite uninspired, I imagine, in general. I mean, ID, if you haven't seen it.
Oh, mate, what a movie.
It's fucking hilarious. It's got to be the funniest football. It really is the football hooligan film. The Football Factory was like the modern version of it. ID, where Rhys Dinsdale plays an undercover copper who goes native.
Yeah.
And becomes top boy of a Millwall. But I just found it, I could watch it over and over and over again. And it's quite scary, but there's some really funny bits in it. So I probably, you know what, I think I'd have definitely seen it before then. I wasn't buying that to watch it for the first time, I think.
Well,
I just really wanted to own it.
It was released in 1995. Interesting to see that you're going through Amazon and you're finding comfort in the past a lot already. You're going to Amazon to get your... I don't want to do too heavy-handed a reading here for you.
No, I think that's very, very true.
You're looking.
I've never thought of that.
The comfort of the mid-90s, even if the comfort is found in a football violence movie. It's an odd place to find comfort, but you know.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think I'm quite a nostalgic buyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, I'd never crystallised it like that before.
But is that
God,
because when
you really
go...
open me up there.
Yeah, mate, that's what I do, man. That's what I do. It's just a neat pass and I'll open you right up. That's what this podcast does. It's interesting though, isn't it? When you go online and you're going into the Amazon portal, for a lot of people, when they're first getting into it, they go into it, and we've had this a lot on the show, and they go looking for stuff that they remember as a kid but want to bring back into their lives because they've got rid of it or they've not seen it for years. And we get this a lot, actually.
Oh, so that's good. So I'm not some sort of freak.
Well, it's not been as good. You know, we're only a few items into your episode, Matt. So I'll let you know by the end if you're a freak or not. I mean, that's what this is essentially. We could call this podcast Freak Watch. Freak or not. So ID, interesting film. It's got good reviews. It's got very good reviews. 152 reviews, almost all 5 stars. Almost all. 66% 5 stars, which is pretty good, actually. Dave says hasn't aged well, but still a decent watch. I rented this film as it was from memory, one of the better football hooligan films from my teenage years. I hadn't seen it for a good 20 years, as I could never find it anywhere on the internet. I mean, this could basically be the voice of Matt Ford, this, couldn't it? Here we are.
It could.
20 years ago, this would have got a solid 4 out of 5 from me, but looking at it through my now 41-year-old eyes, I can only give it a 3.
You can't retrospectively punish. You have to judge it on what your view would have been at the time, surely.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's not saying, well, the special effects are shit.
Yeah, totally. You have to give it the benefit of nostalgia. You have to, if anything, it ups it a star or two, right? Like a fine wine. It improves.
And what are the reviews like for the Hugh Gaitskill book?
Oh, let's have a look at that, shall we? That's a great show. Hang on a sec. So, Hugh Gates School.
I hope it was well reviewed. I enjoyed it.
Here we go. It's got 4.5 stars out of 5. Fascinating account of a politician and period, which are both not that long ago. That's some insight there. Someone. Excellent book. This masterly and very detailed biography of a great man brings Hugh Gates School vividly alive. And for those of us who remember him, as I definitely do, he was a girlhood hero of mine. It represents a complete survey of the man, his time, his personality, his achievements, and his failures. I was given the book in about 1997 as a present, but did not read it until this year, 2018. In a way, I'm glad, as its significance in a post-Blair world is this. And then she goes on about just going into the sort of Blair comparisons, because that is what happens with Gates School, isn't it? He is the sort of, I mean, trying to get rid of Clause 4, amazing to think he was doing that in what, the 60s? When was he leader?
Yeah, so it's he was well ahead of his time, really, in terms of realising the Labour Party had to be more moderate and to the country first.
And
so it's interesting she got it in 1997, obviously, because that's when Blair got elected. So that she must have been quite a Blairite, and someone's given her that as a gift and gone, if you like Blair, you know, that's like people saying, well, if you like Oasis, listen to this by the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, I just saw that film yesterday, the other night.
And
I wonder if I could do a political version where
New
Labour never existed.
Oh, that's a great idea. That is such a good idea.
Is it? Well, you know what? I went cold on it halfway through, though. I was like, who would give a shit?
You could start to introduce the third way. There is no left or right. There's the third way. That would be great. Can you imagine? Nothing wrong with getting wealthy as long as you pay your taxes. Imagine that. I don't know much about Hugh Gates School, but having read some of the reviews here, it definitely piques my interest. It's worth talking, Matt, if you don't mind, about your connection with Blair, because didn't you work for him, or you worked for the Labour Party in the 90s?
I worked for the Labour Party in the noughties when Blair was leader, and then when Brown was leader. So I worked for the party from about 2005 to about 2007, and had worked for Labour MPs before that, and carried on working around the Labour. I then went to work as an advisor in local government after that to Labour politicians, but I was employed directly by the party in that period.
Right,
and obviously that sort of politics had a huge influence on me. And I was a huge supporter of moderate Labour ideas, and it was. Blair himself, the single most talented politician I've ever encountered. And I think I don't think Britain's ever really produced, people could argue about who the greatest prime minister is, but in terms of ability, he's kind of freakishly talented.
Yeah. Even now when he does, you know, assuming that this is probably good. Oh God, I'm going to get tweets. But you know, the
tweets are good.
Tweets are good. But just the way that as soon as he does anything now, Iraq, just this the klaxon, the trigger that happens underneath anything. But as soon as you watch any of his videos about Brexit, especially any of his videos recently about the corona stuff, you just watch it and go, yeah, that's a leader. Even if I don't necessarily agree with him, it's hard to disagree with him when he's being moderate and sensible and grown up. And that's sorely been lacking in British politics for the best part of a decade now, hasn't it?
Oh, massively. And it's the attributes that he brings. He is a phenomenal communicator. He's also relentlessly pragmatic never is personal or rude about people. He's failingly polite. And those gifts, sadly, don't seem to have been bestowed on anyone else in the way that they were with him. He really was uniquely talented as a politician. So the thing is with Iraq, you can understand why people disagree with it and why people feel very emotional about it. And I could certainly understand that. But I think with most people, actually, their view of Blair is more complex. They probably do disagree with Iraq now, even if they didn't at the time. But they also think he's talented. They also think he's the best leader Labour's ever had.
Yeah.
And they remember voting for him not that long ago, and they know they're not voting for Labour now. So the public still have, I think, a fairly balanced, fair view of it all.
That may all change now with Keir, but let's not go too far into that, because we'll see how that goes. You were working for the Labour Party in the late noughties, and at what point did you leap into stand-up land? Was it when 2010 happened and David Cameron appeared and you were like, right, fuck that shit, I'm done here?
I certainly made the choice at that point to, well, I'd always done stand-up. I did my first gig when I was 16, so I started out as a comedian and then went into politics, and the two weren't really compatible. And then I moved to London, and then I started doing radio stuff, and then I was able to I was working in public affairs as well. So I had all these different things on the go.
Yeah.
And then because I could jack in the day job, I could then do a bit more radio. And then that was when I was able to do a bit more stand-up. So it wasn't that, you know, the 2010 election, like, changed my mind or anything like that.
Yeah. And when you did stand-up, were you very political?
Not at first, no.
Okay.
No, when I first started, it was fairly standard, getting drunk,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck you talk about when you're 16, you know, stuff you've seen on telly.
You didn't stand up when you were 16. And where did you grow up then?
Nottingham.
So where were you doing Daryl Martin's gig in Nottingham then when you were 16?
Yeah, that's right. So I did my first gig at the Malt Cross Music Hall. He ran a night there called Mad Dog Comedy Club. And then on Sunday nights, he had Just the Tonic at the Old Vic.
Yeah.
So I did that, you know, only once in a while, because what material are you going to have at that age? And I wasn't thinking, oh, I want to be a comedian. I just sort of fancied having a go.
Yeah.
And would sort of write bits and pieces and then gig once in a while, you know. It wasn't any sort of great, more a hobby, really. But I realised once I was working in politics, probably wasn't a sensible hobby to have.
It's quite interesting, though, the comparisons, though, with doing politics and doing stand-up, because that communication, that clear-cut, precise communication, when you are a successful stand-up, you have got a clear voice and a clear background, like just a whole character and authority that works. And it's the same with politicians. The ones who have got that clarity are the ones who do well. It's kind of similar, right?
I guess it is. Yeah, I never thought of that. I mean, they're both involved. You know, talking is the tool of the trade, I guess. And that's where the art is contained. So I think they're very similar in that regard. And I think what they both have is, I think until you've actually done it, your opinion on it is somewhat, not pointless, but there's something about actually having to get up on stage yourself and say those words in a particular way that focuses the mind,
yeah.
That you really realise then what works and what doesn't. And I include myself in this, in that I've never stood for office. I've never been a politician. I've been an advisor. I've been around it, so I can sort of guess what it's like. But I've never had to go out and try and get people to vote for me. And I think until you've done that bit,
yeah.
And it is you that's responsible, I don't think anyone, and even myself, with all the political experience I have, I will never really know what that's like.
So,
and I suppose that's why I find them completely fascinating.
Have you never been up onto a stage at a rally and tried to get people to vote Labour? I mean, you must have, because of, like...
I don't think I ever did any Labour rallies. I did a People's Vote thing last year. I hosted a People's Vote rally.
Yeah, right.
Which was exciting, but that was more like hosting a gig, really.
Yes. Yeah, you can be flippant. You can be Matt Ford comedian. You can be flippant. But, I mean, have you ever sort of earnestly stood on a stage and tried to emote and make... Because it's fucking hard. It's not something we've ever done, but watching people like Eddie Izzard, when Eddie Izzard was on Question Time and he has a political axe to grind, he was terrible. He's an amazing stand-up, but on Question Time, because of his, you know... His emotions, I guess, and there was no clarity of thought, and he just fell apart. And it's like, fuck, I said he is one of my favourite comedians, really struggling in that situation because he believes so hard.
I suppose I've done Question Time a couple of times, and doing Talk Sport for so long was basically debating and arguing with people night after night after night after night. So I've done that,
but
I've never got up and said, you need to vote for me now. to improve this community or this country. And I think until you've done that step, you know, even going on Question Time doesn't compare.
You'd slip into a gag anyway. But your training, you'd need to vote for me. You'd just sort of, you'd find a bit of observational comedy about, you know, self-service tills, and that's it.
I hope I would. I can't say my way.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it a lovely thing. Wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.
When they're looking through your shopping history and they don't understand it, you have been bought red-handed.
All right, Matt Ford, let's skip on ahead now. 2017, look at this. We've got the Santa Sleigh Father Christmas.
Yes.
Please tell us about this.
I love Christmas.
Me too. Yeah, me too. So
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I love everything about it. I love the fact that in winter we put lights up and we make this really cold, dark, miserable part of the year really happy. And I love the smells. I love the smell of cinnamon and orange peel and cloves.
Well, mate, I can see the Lily Flame Christmas spice diffuser, which you've also bought on the bed.
Yes, guys.
Please note this is bought sort of mid to late November. So you are quick off the mark. You're up there with my wife in terms of buying Christmas stuff early in the year.
Yes, well, what this is I like to get it all up out on the 1st of December. So a tree up, everything out. So I need to get the stuff in if I need to get stuff in before then.
Yeah.
Because when you start ordering it, I like to really enjoy it. I watch Christmas films every day. I have a Christmas playlist. I listen to carols. I listen to hymns, as well as pop songs like Saviour's Day by Cliff Richard. Wow. And a couple of years ago, I really went for it and got a lot of stuff in. Candles, a singing dog. That blanket, the Santa sleigh blanket, thick wool blanket with a print of Santa on it.
Do you sit under a Santa blanket surrounded by candles listening to Cliff Richard for a month?
Yeah, a highly flammable Santa blanket surrounded by candles.
It's just like you do this really tacky version of the lockdown, but for the month of December.
I love it. I have little tea light holders. I have all sorts of ornaments, LED snowflakes.
I
love it all.
This is great. The insight this gives me into you, as someone I've gigged with you a few times, we've done a few bits and bobs together, and I think of you as I wouldn't have put this on your doorstep, to be honest. This is not how I'd imagine.
Why not?
You are a lager-swilling Oasis fan, okay, Matt? You are a man's man. You love your Nottingham Forest football. That is where I pin you in my head, and now I look at this and the texture. I'm unpeeling the onion here, and I fucking love what I'm finding.
Oh, mate, oh, that's good. I just love it. I've always been obsessed with it.
And me too, but I feel exactly the same way. I become an old lady for the month of December, and I feel no shame. Again, there's no room for guilt in this podcast or indeed in life. Just enjoy those pleasures.
And you can eat and drink loads at that time of year. And your body's telling you to eat and drink loads because it's cold and it's dark. So evolution is calling to you to drink ale and wine and pies.
Yeah.
I love all the flavours and smells. And I just love that that's what it's become. You know, that kind of, there's that herby, spicy smell to Christmas, whether it's in mulled wine or mince pies. Mm. Oh.
Christmas is
height of summer, I look out the window and think, I can't wait for it to be Christmas.
Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. John Richardson used to have great material about how when it gets towards winter, I start to feel like this is me again. It's like when you're with a girl who's not the right girl. And you pretend to be into clubbing and do you know what I mean? And doing and going to festivals. And then Christmas comes where you get to stay indoors and sit in your jumper and listen to bad music. And you're like, yeah, that's me. I'm with the right person now.
You know what? It's interesting you mention him because John and I lived together for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And the Christmases we had were amazing.
I can imagine.
We got dressed up. We got, I think the two Christmases we had together, I think we were drunk every day in December. It was brilliant. We'd get ourselves advent calendars.
Yes.
Jumpers. The whole house was done out. We had a massive Christmas party. It was fantastic. We both loved it just as much as each other. And we really fed off each other's love for it. We were going to the pub every night. It was just brilliant. Yeah. They were two amazing Christmases.
Those are perfect. That is exactly what you should do. That's exactly. And also, did you stop gigging? Because Christmas gigs, I love the comics who just, it gets to December and there are a lot of comics who go, no, I'm not. I'm just not going to gig in December. I'm just not going to do it.
Oh, it's awful. I did, you know what? I never really did that many Christmas gigs, but I did one a few years ago. Because the problem is the money's good. So there's always part of you that goes, well, for it's only 20 minutes and you forget the hell that you walk into. So I did one down in Portsmouth and a fight broke out. People getting punched and knocked out and stuff. And I just thought, I'm never doing this again. So that was one, I think maybe that was even 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I haven't done one since then. And I didn't do that many before. Yeah. They're dreadful. I mean, you only do them for the money. And that's a horrible thing to ever perform for, just the money. So there is no other, you don't get any of the other benefits of performing at Christmas gigs.
But I would say that the suffering I went through in terms of doing gigs at Christmas, and often a lot of other gigs I did as well, that's now been sort of so thumbed into my DNA that it is impossible for me not to enjoy a night in. Impossible. Even during lockdown, when I'm having night in after night in after night in, I enjoy every single one because every night I think, oh, thank fuck, I'm not doing a Christmas gig in Portsmouth tonight.
That is a really good point. That actually, when it gets to Christmas, you think, at least I don't have to do that.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. At least I'm not out there.
I've never
the front
thought
line.
Of it like that before.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm a big fan of your Christmas file. You're a Santa file, and I'm very, very, very keen on that. It also, it's the place where my palate belongs. It's where my palate is home. You know what I mean? I want stodge and sugar, yes, and starch and comfort, yeah, and all those things.
Booze.
Yeah.
Chocolate liqueurs.
Oh my God.
Chocolate. Absolutely. With booze in it. And you can just eat trays and trays and trays of them. Oh, yes. Get them in the pound shop. I go to Poundland for all my chocolate liqueurs. They're amazing. You get Jim Beam Baileys.
Oh.
Oh, my God. For a quid. You're talking probably 20 to 30 liqueurs in a box for a quid.
Mm. I love how comparatively enthusiastic you are. You know, I was talking about Hugh Gateskill, a guy who tried to change the world. And actually, this is your true politics. Yeah. This is where you belong.
Yeah. Selfishness.
So 2018 now, and some fascinating stuff here. September 2018, the Aptro men's Hawaiian shirt. And also a large 5x3 England St. George's flag. That's June 2018. So that's when the Euros were on. Is that right? Euros or?
Yeah, that was World Cup. Last summer's World Cup.
Yes, we did all right, didn't we, in that year? Well, England did all right, I should say.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Mm,
got so close.
I know.
I think the thing was, I love them. I've always been one to... I'm a Forest fan, first and foremost, but I've always supported England. And I know a lot of other people fell out of love with England for a period of time, and it was a lot harder to support them. But I still loved it.
Yeah.
And I always loved getting... I just love the collective experience of a European Championships or a World Cup when everyone's supporting England. And if they start doing okay, it's brilliant.
Yes.
And I always like to hang a flag out the window. And so I bought a few of them for the World Cup.
Right.
And obviously... Because we got to the semi-final, I basically had it hanging out my window for the best part of a month.
Right.
I was really sad. But I would find myself... I got very emotional about it all.
Yeah.
And I just can't... That semi-final against Croatia when Trippier scores, you think, well, this is... We've got one foot in the final now. And I just think...
Yeah, yeah. We went 1-0 up, didn't we? Right?
Ooh. Yeah, I just think we'd have beaten them. I think we'd have beaten them if we played them now. I think it felt like, I think it was all done with a bit of a laugh, that one, where people hadn't got behind the England team for a long time, and then people were falling back in love with it, and they really liked Southgate.
Yeah.
And it felt like we rode our luck a bit. We definitely got a bit lucky at times.
Yeah.
So it was all done with a bit of a laugh and a smile.
Oh, mate, waistcoats, love. Look at the lolathon that were the waistcoats.
Exactly.
Oh.
And it wasn't too serious. It was all a bit of a joke. And I think, given other things that had happened politically in the last few years, it was really nice to bring people together around a positive national symbol.
Yeah,
and
during
a heat wave, it was great. It felt like the 90s again. It just felt like everyone lost their heads for a few weeks and just had fun. And
see, there he is, mate. He's going back to his comfort blanket of the 90s.
No, I loved it. I was meant to be going to the Euros this summer, but they've been put off till next year. I had tickets to 4 games, 2 quarterfinals.
Oh, but they'll be all valid for next year, won't they?
I know, but I was ready. I was ready now.
Yeah, that's all right. A delayed pleasure is a much better pleasure, honestly. It'll still
Do you
be
think?
Great. Yeah. Also, Wales will be even stronger. It'll be fine. let's not dwell on that. So, Hawaiian shirt. Any excuses, any reasons why you've got the Hawaiian shirts there? Are you just a fan what is going on?
I cannot recommend these shirts highly enough. So, my weight fluctuates a bit, but I'm always just slightly on their heavier side.
Does it go up a bit towards December, maybe, by any chance, based on what we've been hearing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So I need to keep my weight down. So I was going on a holiday to Mauritius.
Oh, lovely.
Ooh. For a fortnight. And I thought, well, I've got to have some... What I need is some nice shirts that I can wear to dinner in the evening that are thin, that are summery.
Right.
And, you know, fine for a chap who puts on weight quick. So these are kind of... They're slightly... I didn't know this when I bought them, but they're kind of cottony polyestery, but with a slight elasticity in them.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
They can accommodate me up to various weights, but they're really light.
So those are all you can eat friendly, aren't they? If they've got elasticity,
these are great. They're just the two of the best shirts I've ever had, and I will wear them as soon as the weather gets good when I can go out. But the abuse I get for them.
Well, I wasn't going to begin the abuse because you're on my podcast and you might just leave, and I don't want you to hang up.
No, abuse away.
But I mean, I'm looking at one of a yellow submarine being chased by a blue whale. Which is
and a shark.
And a shark, which is just some sort of nightmare. And on the other one, it's got power. It's white. The base colour is white. And then I can't quite say. I think, is it What animal's on there? Is it a penguin? No, I can't see probably because it's
like a toucan and a toucan, parrots, yeah, I think.
There you go, parrots. Exotic animals. It looks... Yeah. I don't know if you've seen Tiger King, but it's the sort of thing that Joe Exotic might wear on holiday.
But you can't go to a tropical paradise and walk around in a three-piece suit, can you? You know, you've got to dress appropriately. And these were breathable, right, light. They could, as I say, accommodate fluctuations in weight. They've got a collar, so they're okay for dinner.
And you also didn't need to wear your St. George's flags that you'd bought. You didn't need to wear those around your neck because you'd know you were British when people saw you. There is no
exactly,
doubt.
Yes.
No need for a passport, yeah, mate. I've absolutely got your number. We are now crashing into present day, right? We're in 2020 now, Matt. We're looking at some of the things. So we've got things like the blonde USA president Halloween fancy dress wig. Amazing.
Yeah.
Got the wigs ready. So that's something you bought March 2020. Is that for the lockdown breakdown? Is that for lockdown entertainment?
I just thought, so I bought a Donald Trump wig and a Boris wig. But the Boris wig, I don't know if you can see it on there, it says 90s messy surfer guy.
He is 90s messy surfer guy.
So it doesn't really, it kind of does the job as a Boris wig, but it kind of doesn't. But I just thought, if I'm going to be at home all the time,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to have to... find ways to like maybe put stuff out, and I can impersonate Trump and Boris. So I just thought, well, I'll get the wigs in and see what happens.
Right.
And actually, I've used them a couple of times. I have got some use out of them. I mean, they're really crap wigs. They're not good enough. They're not good enough. They don't look really like either one of them. So I think I'd be better off without them. But now I've got them, I can use them for stuff. They've come in handy a couple of times already.
Great. I mean, there's always there has to be just the tiniest of voices, even though you are a talented impersonator. There has to be the tiniest of voices as you sit at your desk in your house and put a wig on for a camera. Just a small voice saying, mate, what are you doing? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, mate, not just a small voice. Right, okay. Every part of you says, don't be that bloke.
Yeah,
what
exactly
have you become, you fucking loser? Do it without the wig, you prick. Stuff like that. But then, to be fair, for a couple, it's really worked. So they were cheap.
Okay.
You know, I would never use them at a gig. I suppose they're quite interesting because they are lockdown only. I would never have bought them had we not been in lockdown.
Yeah.
So I bought them for that reason. And then, so I did a gig. I did James Gill's gig, which is ABC Comedy, which he's now started doing live over Zoom. So we decided I was going to do it as Trump, so then I could dress up as Trump and pretend to be him. And that just added... I think if people are paying to watch you on like an internet gig, it looks like I've made a bit more effort.
A bit of showbiz, mate. Yeah, a bit of showbiz.
A bit of showbiz,
you know, if they're now listening to this and they found out you're actually just wearing a wig bought off Amazon, that's taking the edge off for them, so apologies.
I think it was only about a fiver.
Fiver?
I think so, yeah. It's the really cheapest car. Because the problem is, the ones that are any good, obviously, are like hundreds of pounds.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's not get that, mate. Let's not go crazy. Blonde. Wait. Hang on a second. I love how they can't name Trump in it. Blonde USA president.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. And the one's not. So I typed in Boris wig, and that's what comes up.
$12.99, mate. The blonde USA president Halloween fancy dress wig, pin badge, and red tie. There you go. That is $12.99. Some amazing reviews. Stanley's mum, poor quality. So.
But what were these people expecting for the price?
Michael's said, nothing like Trump's hair. Just a cheap fancy dress wig. I mean, yes, Michael. It's
$12.99,
it is, mate. What's wrong with you?
How much was it?
£12.99.
Oh, God, I thought it was a fiver.
And then
that is quite, you know, maybe 12. But it's still cheap for a wig, isn't it? You're not going to get ultra-realistic Trump hair for $12.99.
No, I mean, if Donald Trump himself can't get ultra realistic Trump hair, then you're actually impossible. This is someone called Mr. Trevor Lazenby says, you'd probably read this review much better than me. It was a great wig, a superb wig. It did the job. It was a great wig, a superb wig. It made wigs
it
great again.
It was a great wig, a very good wig. And I think it's probably the best wig I have seen during the lockdown, and it's a great honor to be here.
Yes, please.
Is that all right? Was that? That'll do that nicely. I hadn't done my vocal warm ups.
Very good. I enjoyed that. Mind you, I tell you what, a pleasure for me recently has been waking up and looking at the Donald Trump press conferences from the night before.
Oh, man.
He's losing his... I mean, he never had a mind in the first place, but he's really going somewhere now, isn't he?
Well, the thing is, obviously, there's an element of you that watches it purely for the entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is he going to say? And that entertainment is contained in the fact that he is the president. That's what makes it even more mad.
Yeah.
But that is also what makes it horrific. And you know what? Him being mad is bad enough. But at least in, you know, so-called peacetime, you could say, well, it's embarrassing, but he's doing no harm. Mm. You realise the harm he's doing. Like, he called this thing a hoax. Like, people in America will get ill and die
because
when they shouldn't have done because of the way he reacted to it. So it's just, it's so mad. It's a real, especially when you do, when there are things that he says that are so insane, you can't help but laugh. That is the natural human reaction.
But it's so tragic.
How ludicrous
it's
the scenario
is. Yeah.
The guilt I feel when I've laughed at something, I'm like, I feel, you know, it's like getting a boner about a relative or something. Like, what?
But it's true. I completely agree. You are laughing, but it's the blackest, most gallows humour because you're right. People are fucking dying because of him. Like, it
doesn't get more serious than that.
No, man. It's really bad. It's really bad. And what are your predictions for his chances in the election this year? Which eventually one day someone will be listening to this after the election in November 2020. Assuming it happens, what do you reckon?
I think he probably gets re-elected.
Yeah, me too.
Because most presidents do. And I just think with him, before all this, you know, his approval ratings were good, and I think the sort of economy had done all right.
Yeah.
So those things are quite important. And I just think any candidate fighting Trump is defined by Trump. Any debate is the Trump show, and they exist only in relation to him rather than in their own right. And I just think that's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I don't think at the moment American public opinion has shifted significantly enough for him to be in danger. But who knows? You know, if there's widespread moral outrage at the way he's handled this thing, then this could be the thing that topples him. But
yeah.
I don't see it.
If he is re-elected, obviously bad news for the human race. Excellent news for anyone who's invested $12.99 in a Donald Trump wig. Because
I get five more years out of that.
More years playing the long game. And then we'll come crashing into. I mean, these are current. These are live orders now, Matt. So we've started off with you diving back musically into the 90s and all sorts of like political biographies. And now here we are, delivered yesterday. Curry powder, hot.
Yes. Oh, mate! And come on. You know what? Yeah. That is such a big tin of curry powder. It's massive.
Right.
I'm addicted to spice, and I make a lot of homemade curries. I would never say this. I would never self-aggrandize, but I've managed to get myself to a point where I can cook a really good curry from scratch, and it's very satisfying. Yes. But the problem is, as anyone who likes curry will tell you, the more you eat, the more you need that hit. It's like chasing your first ecstasy pill. You're like, well, I need it stronger and harder now. I need like bigger and bigger highs.
So
I've just become obsessed with finding really hot chilies and really hot curry powder. So I got some Scotch bonnets in, and I ordered a big tin of hot curry powder. And
oh my god! And does your girlfriend really come with you on this journey, or does she stay back a bit?
Because part of the way, I'll cook it.
I see.
And she'll have a little bit. I mean, what I would say is, it really, a hot curry really affects the body, my body.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if it affects women in the same way. I think it's blokes that struggle with it.
Well, do you know what?
She's scraping it in the bin, but she seems fine.
I've got a theory about this. I mean, we're talking about the same thing here, right? In terms of the after effects of curry.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a theory about this. But because my wife eats, when we go for a curry in Chesterfield, which is where she's from, there's an amazing place called Indian Blue in Chesterfield. And in fact, you grew up in Nottingham, so same sort of similar part of the world. Wonderful.
Yeah, I've been to Chesterfield, I love it. Right. Yeah, with the Crooked Spire.
There you go. But wonderful curry houses in that part of the world. And
yes, very good.
She eats way more than me. But here's the thing, I eat way faster. Like
I eat faster, yeah.
There you are, mate.
Ah, so maybe that's it.
There you are, love. It's because you're not slowing down, you're not chewing. She keeps going longer and she eats more, and there's no, oh Christ, open a window 2 hours later. None of that. Whereas for me, I'm like, I'm so sorry, everyone. And we go back, you know, we're staying in Chesterfield at her parents', you know, quite small house, and I'm like, I'm this is so bad, the whole house is being impacted here by what I'm doing.
Yes.
Because I've gone...
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, I do both. I eat fast, but I eat long as well.
Oh, mate. That is... That's the dream, to be honest.
It's a double whammy.
Yeah. Other things here as well, but equally, this is the interesting thing here: the fitness thing. Obviously, you've got the bike that you've bought here. I can see the exercise bike. You've bought those things. Oh, what are they called? It just says all I can see is arriving Saturday for those bands. Those elastic bands. You stand on one bit and then you just got to pull them up loads. They are evil but incredibly effective.
I've never used them before. Resistance bands.
Resistance bands. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah,
I've never used them, but someone said to me that because I'm using the bike all the time, they're like, well, you get fit, but you won't necessarily lose weight. And if you want to lose weight, resistance stuff is what you do. So I've ordered some of these resistance bands for a...
Mate,
I might mix it up one day and muck about with them, but I don't know how to use them. And they don't come with any guide, so... I've just got these long bits of red elastic.
That's all you need. To be honest, if they're elasticated enough, you can make them into a nice shirt to absorb the curry powder gas problems.
You know what? I could wrap myself up, like, could use it like a girdle.
Yeah.
A big Johnny.
There you go. Just put them over your mouth. Just cover your mouth so they are a prophylactic against all of the curry, and you'll lose loads of weight. Bom, bom, my Matt, thank you very much for letting us dive
in. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, mate. I really feel like I've learned a lot about you, and most of it has been excellent news.
Thank you very much.
Matt, where can we find you? What's the best place for us to tell people about what you're up to at the moment? Follow you on Twitter, is it?
Twitter, at Matt Ford, with an A on the end, and tickets to tour shows, mattford.com/live.
That was, mate, thank you so much for doing that.
Well, that was a real pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
And of course, always. All right, thank you so much, and good luck with everything.
Mate. Cheers, mate.
And, see you soon. Oh, I really like Matt Ford. What a lovely man. And what an excellent shopping listery he had. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy me, and, you know, obviously, who doesn't? I'm doing a podcast every day at the moment with Dave Cribb. It's called Cabin Fever. You can get that on Great Big Al. So check that out if you get a sec. And in the meantime, stay well, stay happy. Hope everything's going all right with you. And give us a follow at ToasterPod on Twitter. And if you give us a nice review, honestly, it makes the world of difference, he says. Says hinting hard, long and hard. I'm looking at you. I know you keep meaning to do it and you've not done it yet. Please give me some stars. Oh God, validate me. Bye-bye.
Can't face those Twitter notifications? Forgot to watch anything but Netflix? Dreading the video conference small talk at 9? You need a news vitamin, you know. You need the Smart 7. It's a brand new daily podcast that puts your brain into gear. Everything you need to know in less than 7 minutes. You need the smarts? Hey, we got the smarts. The Smart 7, every weekday at 7 a.m. Available right now on Spotify and all the usual places.